All right, now the topic, as you know from the schedule today, is microscopes. But within that same chapter, there's another one that we're going to do in a separate meeting called cells. And they feature the same setup, so the same stuff will be sitting out the other time. But we're doing them in separate weeks. Usually, up till this term, we would do them microscopes one day, 1 week, and then the following week we'd do cells. We'd switch that around. So we're doing microscopes today, then we'll have an osmosis week next time, and then we'll get back to using the scopes in the cells. But in terms of the manual, notice that microscopes and cells is lumped into one chapter starting on 72. And as far as what you need to get done today is concerned, I want you to go up to, well, I want you to go through page 80. Don't do page 81. We'll do that in a different week. And the reason we do these in two separate, technically, we could finish it all in one, but we're doing it in two because this first one, microscopes, is really just a way to get some practice. Because it's actually not very easy to use a microscope properly. And it's almost certain that everyone here sucks at microscopy at the moment. Because you have to actually learn how to do it well. That's what today is about. Just getting used to using it, really, more than anything else. And that'll include me actually telling you how to do it, along with telling you the proper names for the scope. This isn't exactly the same model you have, but it's pretty similar. Anyway, at the most basic, not obviously this is a microscope, but a little bit more specifically than that, it is a light microscope. Remember the slide today upstairs showed that there were two major kinds of microscopes, light microscopes, electron microscopes. Well, light microscopes use humanly visible light that's passed through the specimen, which is whatever you're trying to magnify, get a better look at, and it goes through a lens before it hits your eye. An electron microscope, instead of using light, uses beams of electrons. And you don't look through that kind of scope. Those electrons have to form an image on a monitor. But the real practical difference between the two is that an electron microscope is able to it has much finer resolution. So it's able to go down to not only see organelles within cells, but see that actual detail. Those photographs that I showed you today, not the cartoon ones, but the photographs, are electron micrographs. You don't get that detail with a light microscope. But anyway, more specific than saying that this is a light microscope, it is a slide microscope. Not all light microscopes are slide scopes. It's a slide scope because the only thing you should ever look at on this kind of scope is a glass microscope slide with something on it. There are other light microscopes in this third cabinet, though. These are dissecting scopes. And you're supposed to play around with these either this time or the next time in 2 weeks. Play around with them a little bit. These do not magnify nearly as much. You don't put things on slides to use on this. You put anything that fits under it, like your fingers or petri dishes full of stuff. It's actually pretty cool to look at your fingers in detail under a dissecting scope. But anyway, that's what those are. Those are light microscopes as well, but these are slide scopes. Even more specifically, this is an example of a compound microscope. And what makes it compound is not simply that it has multiple lenses. That's not enough of a definition. For instance, it's not compound because it has two lenses that you look through. The fact that there's two lenses to look through means that it's a binocular scope, not compound. What makes a scope a compound scope is that there are two different kinds of lenses that light travels through sequentially. First through one, and then through another. And so there are two different stages of magnification before the light enters your eye. What are the two categories of lenses? Ocular and objective. But the order in which light travels through them is the reverse. The light goes through the objective lens first. The reason it's called the objective lens is that it's the lens that's close to the object you're trying to magnify. And the objective lens will magnify that image a certain amount. But before that light enters your eye, that already magnified image, the light from that already magnified image, goes through the second lens type, which is the ocular lens. And ocular simply means of the eye. So that's why they're called ocular lenses. They're the ones you actually look through. That will magnify the already magnified image even more. So that by the time it reaches your eye and gets sent to the brain, you see a much larger thing than what it actually is in real life. All right. Therefore, the simplest possible compound microscope would have one objective lens and one ocular lens. This is more complex than that because there are multiple objective lenses, and they're the silver-barreled lenses that you can see are mounted on this swivel device. Mine has four, but yours might have only three. What is this swivel device that houses the objective lenses called? It is the nose piece, yes. And so this black knurled ring you use to change objective lenses. What's different about the different objective lenses on the same scope is their individual magnifications, which is stamped on the side of each lens. For instance, the red striped lens on this model, it wouldn't be necessarily on other models, but on this model is stamped as 4X. That's the lowest powered objective lens that we have on this model. The reason that these objective lenses are different lengths is because the shorter the length of the lens, the smaller the magnification. But 4X simply means that that lens just by itself makes the image appear four times bigger than it actually is. But remember, that doesn't go straight to our eyes. So that already four times bigger image then goes through the ocular lens, and it has its own magnification, which in this model is 10 times. Then it reaches our eyes. But the total magnification, how much bigger it looks to us, is the mathematical product of the two individual magnifications. So 4x times 10x is 40x. It would look 40 times bigger than it actually is. But the nose piece allows you to choose other objective lenses to get even more magnification. You don't change the magnification of the oculars, that's set for the device. But you can go up to a higher objective magnification and therefore have a greater total magnification. Okay, now one thing that is important in properly using these things, and I see them improperly used all the time, is that you need to customize this scope to your particular body in a couple different ways. And one thing that's important is that if the ocular lenses are uncomfortable to reach with your eyes, then move your stool up. That'll make it a hell of a lot easier. But these are binocular scopes, as I said. It has two oculars, not just one, so you use both eyes. That's not just because you have two eyes, it's because you'll get much better results if you have a binocular scope, because using both eyes gives you depth perception. You know, when you grab for something, your brain is making thousands of calculations on how far away that thing actually is based on different information that's coming in through the two eyes. It's looking at the same thing at slightly different angles. If you lose an eye, or if you just cover an eye and try to catch something that someone throws at you, it'll be much harder with just one eye. You don't have that depth perception. So these are more expensive than monocular scopes, but some students, I see a lot of students just close one eye. I can't get it to work with two eyes. They'll say, well, you're just not trying to do it properly. You lose all the depth perception if you only use one eye. So one important way of customizing it to your body is to adjust it for what is called the interpupillary distance. That's simply the distance between your two pupils of your two eyes, which is not a constant value among humans. It's different for each person. Some people have eyes far apart, others close together, anything in between. Well, if you grab these ocular lenses, you notice that you can spread them apart and put them together. So if you've have it plugged in, you can turn the switch on the right side of the base. And if you still see no light, you can adjust the dimmer on the other side of the base. You don't even have to have a slide on there. You can look through with both eyes and adjust that interpupillary distance so that with both eyes open, you just see one circle of light. If you see two circles of light, it's not the right adjustment. Okay, that's one way in which you customize it for your body. I'll talk about another in a minute. I just mentioned the light, the power switch, of course, which has to be on for the light to be on. It has to be plugged in. But there's also the dimmer switch, or the dimmer knob on the other side, which is an often overlooked control by beginning microscopists. There's a tendency among beginners to think, well, more light is better in all cases, so they'll just max out the dimmer. That's not good. Too much light will wash the image out. You won't see it nearly as well. So remember that the dimmer is there, by the way, when you look at stuff today. And turn it up or down, you'll see that you get better quality at some intermediate value. The reason there is an adjustment, though, is because different objective lenses not only have different magnifications, but they allow different amounts of light to pass through them. When you go up in magnification by going to a longer objective, less light will be going through it, and therefore it will look dimmer. That's when it's appropriate to turn the dimmer up a little bit. When you're on a low-powered objective, you want it to be lower or it will be washed out. Now that dimmer knob is one way that you can affect the apparent brightness, but that control affects only the light intensity. So if that's the only thing that you want to change, that's the way to go. Adjust the dimmer. Another way, though, that you can affect how much light passes to your eyes, and therefore the apparent brightness, is by rotating this control below the platform here. Notice another black knurled ring. And that closes down or opens up a piece that can be called any of three names, either the iris, or the aperture, or the diaphragm. They all refer to the same thing, which is just like the f-stop aperture of a camera. You can close it down or open it up. Well, opened it up, it's going to make it brighter to your eyes, but it's going to affect more than just the brightness. That's why I said if all you want to do is adjust the brightness, the dimmer's the way to go. But play around with the diaphragm, and you can see that it also affects the depth of focus, just like it does for a camera. If you use a closed-down f-stop, you can have more things in focus at once, and you can have a deep focus. If you want a portrait, for instance, you open up the f-stop so that just the person you're photographing is in focus, everything else is out of focus. Okay. The thing that I just called the platform is a platform, but it's not supposed to be called the platform. What is it actually called? The stage, right. The black stage is the thing on which the slide, whatever you're looking at, rests. And there's a hole in the stage, of course, so that the light can pass through it and therefore pass through the slide. But when you load a slide onto the stage, you never care about whether it is centered on the light. Because you always load a slide the only way that it will go into this silver metallic clip, paying no attention to where it is on the stage. Notice the clip opens up, and when you get a slide, there's only one way that it'll go in there properly and clamp. Well, that clamp is able to be moved around because hanging down on the right edge of the stage is a set of concentric knobs. And when you twist those, notice that it moves that metallic clip. The clip plus these controls together make up what is called the mechanical stage. And the mechanical stage is how you move this slide around to see different parts of it. You never directly grab the slide. So you put it in wherever the clip is at the moment, and then you use the mechanical stage's knobs to roughly center it over the light before you start looking at it. The knobs of the mechanical stage are very similar to the knobs of an Etch-a-Sketch. They're still making Etch-a-Sketches these days, aren't they? Okay. So one of the knobs moves the mechanical stage towards you or away from you, and the other one moves it left or right. So whatever position you want, there is some combination of the two knobs that will do it, that will get it there. Okay, I mentioned the 4X objective, which on this model is the lowest powered one, and therefore the shortest. It wouldn't necessarily be 4X on any model, but for this model it's 4X. On any model, though, whatever the lowest powered objective is gets a special name. Do you know that name? The scanning lens, exactly. It's called the scanning lens because when you are looking at a slide through the lens, you don't see the whole slide, right? You're seeing some part of the slide, and what you see is it looks to your eyes like a circle. Even without a slide, what you see is a circle of light, right? That circle, by the way, that you see is called the field of view. But the smaller the magnification, the lower the power of the objective is, the bigger that circle is. That circle always looks the same size to your eyes, but really when you go up in magnification, the circle is smaller. It's looking at a smaller piece of the slide, and therefore everything in that circle looks bigger to you. In other words, with lower magnification, you're more zoomed out. And that's why it's called the scanning lens. It allows you to get a wide view of whatever's on the slide so that you can hopefully see something, a spot that's interesting, and then you can go up to higher magnification to get a better look at that. All right? So that's why it's called the scanning lens. But there's a couple important things about the scanning lens that I haven't mentioned. One of which is that every time you put a new slide on, you need to start over the process I'm going to go through. You always focus with the scanning lens first. Now, one reason is simply because the scanning lens is the shortest. So putting it on the scanning lens gives you more room to work with to safely put your slide in there without ruining anything. But the more important reason you always start on the scanning lens is that it is by far the easiest objective to focus. And so you always start focusing with the scanning lens. All right. Now, this has to do with something that I'll use this picture to demonstrate. This is the side view of the barrel of the objective. This is the edge of the stage. This is the edge of the slide. And the red distance here, the red arrow distance here, is called the working distance, the distance between the objective and the specimen. When we say that we focus, what that really means is that we are placing the specimen at exactly the correct distance for the light rays to converge and look focused to our eyes. So true mathematical focus is only one specific distance from the lens. But because of the way our eyes work, it can be a little bit higher or a little bit lower than true focus, and it will still look focused to our eyes. In other words, there's a range, like a little bracket here. Any positioning within that range would look in focus to our eyes. Well, the reason that the scanning lens, the lowest powered one, is far easier to focus than any other lens is because the smaller the magnification, the greater that range of focus. It's called the depth of focus, that range is. When you go to higher objectives, not only does the depth of focus decrease, but it can be so shallow that it's not even as thick as one cell, which means at high magnification you will see part of the thickness of the cell in focus, the rest of it will be out of focus. And you can actually change to look at different slices of the cell. But that's difficult focus compared to the scanning lens. So always start with the scanning lens. Not only, by the way, does the depth of focus decrease when you go up in magnification, but also the diameter of the field of view decreases. It looks the same size circle to you, but it's really smaller. It's a smaller part of the area of the slide. Okay, now, I said that focusing requires you getting the specimen at the right distance from the lens. What you really do is adjust the height, the vertical position of the stage. And that's why the things that are called focusing knobs do just that. There's duplicate nested pairs of focusing knobs, both sides of the neck. So it doesn't matter which side you use, but notice there's a big knob and a smaller knob. Play around with the big knob and you can see definitely that the stage is moving up and down when you move that. That is called the coarse focus knob. Well, the fine focus, which is the smaller one, also moves it, but it moves it not nearly as much, so it's harder to see that it's moving, but it is. Okay? There's only one actual position, though, in which it'll look focused. So that you use those knobs to do it. Well, here's another important point about starting a new slide. Not only should you have it on the scanning lens, but also every time you change slides, you should use the coarse focus knob to bring the stage all the way down until it stops. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is that it gives you more room to load the slide, so you don't damage anything. But there's a much more important reason. If you don't do that, if you just slap a slide on there with the stage positioned wherever it was from the last person who used it, it's unlikely that it's going to be in perfect focus, right? Meaning it's going to be either, the stage is going to be either too low or too high. Well, you don't know which reason it's unfocused, too high or too low. If it's already too high and you try to focus it by bringing up, it's just going to make it worse. It's never going to come into focus. Starting all the way down, you know that it's not going to be in focus at first, but you also know that the reason it's unfocused is because it's too low. So if you continue looking through the lens while you use the coarse focus knob to gradually bring it up, and sometimes it takes longer than you think, but eventually, as long as you have the slide centered on something to look at, eventually something should pop into view. Okay? That's the way you do that. Now, another definition here, another thing about this scope is that it's an example of a parfocal scope. A parfocal scope is one that's designed so that when you focus with the scanning lens, as you always should start, and then you move the nose piece to go to another higher magnification objective, parfocal means that it should still be at least roughly in focus for that new lens. All you might need to do is tweak the fine focus. So you should only ever use the coarse focus knob on the scanning lens. And once you have it set, any minor adjustments are made at higher magnifications with just the fine focus knob. Now, let's go through the steps of properly using this. I'm assuming that you have already set the intrapupillary distance for your particular eyes. This is why every person has its own microscope, because you have a particular intrapupillary distance. So you set it so that you see just one circle, that's good. Set the stage down. I'm not going to give you a slide yet, but just pretend that you have a slide. But first start by putting the stage all the way down with the coarse focus. The light should be on at intermediate intensity. And then with the once you have a slide, you would put it into the clip of the mechanical stage, and then you'd use the mechanical stage knobs to roughly center the slide over the light. Oh, and I've skipped the fact that you should, before all of this, have it on the scanning lens too. Always start with the scanning lens. Okay? So now you pretend you have a slide in there. It's definitely out of focus because it's all the way down the stage. But here's the proper way to do this. Close your left eye and look through just the right lens with just your right eye opened. The right ocular, I should say. Now keep that open. And this won't make sense until you actually get a slide in there, but remember this step. You're looking at just through your right eye. Use the coarse focus knob to bring it up gradually. Still looking with just one eye until something comes into view. And then using just the coarse focus knob, get that as good as it will be for your eyes with just that control. Then switch to the fine focus knob and see if you can get it even better. Once you have your right eye focused as well as you can with the fine focus knob, take your hands off the focus knob and keep them off the focus knobs. Because you don't want to change it now that it's set for your right eye. Now comes the other way in which you customize it for your body. It's not necessarily true that your two eyes focus the same way. So, after you've set the focus properly for your right eye, close that one, open your left eye, and look through just the left lens. And chances are it won't be in perfect focus. Well, if it's not, then there is a control on the left lens. You can slide on the left lens that's a separate focus just for that ocular lens. So keep your hands off the focus knobs down here, but if it's not still in focus for your left eye, then twist just the left ocular control and that will focus for your left eye. Get that perfect or as well as you can get it. And then you're set for both eyes. Open them both. And assuming you've already set the intrapupillary distance correctly, you should see one circle and it should be in focus. All right? Now, an important thing about going up in magnification is, I said, the scanning lens allows you to scan it for something interesting. But if something interesting is right here at the edge, you don't want to go up in magnification. Because when you go up in magnification, now you're going to be looking at a field of view that's right here, a smaller circle, and that object, whatever it is now off the screen. So when you want to look at something at higher magnification, carefully use the Etch-a-Sketch knobs to get that interesting thing right in the center of the circle, the field of view. That way when you go up into to a higher magnification, it'll still be in the center of the circle. All clear? Now, the practice things that you need to look at today are two varieties, two categories of slides. One of which are prepared slides, meaning someone else prepared them for you. They are permanent, non-disposable, so don't throw these ones away. They're the ones that are in the silver trays. It's three trays because there's three different kinds. It doesn't matter which slide you get from each tray, but get one of each. Just make sure you put them back in the right tray. They're all labeled. Colored threads, letter E, and flea are the things that you're looking at. So make sure when you put them back, they're in the right place. But the colored threads is a slide that involves three different colored threads. I think it's red, yellow, and green, maybe. But they're three different colors. But they're also at different depths. So one thread is low, the other one's above it with some space in between them, and then the top one is even higher in the thickness. This is here to demonstrate what I was saying about depth of focus. So when you focus on that slide with the scanning lens, it has so much of a depth of focus that you can get all three threads to look in focus at the same time. When you then go up into higher magnification, though, the depth of focus is so shallow that you can only focus on one color or the other. The other colors will go out of focus. That's why that's there. The letter E is obviously a letter E. Just with the naked eye, if you pick this up, you can tell that it's a typed letter E. And it's not necessarily so interesting in itself. You've seen E's before. But this demonstrates an important thing about how scopes work. If you look at this with the naked eye so that you can see, it's positioned like it would be to read. It's in the correct orientation. If you put that onto the scope and look through it, it's now going to look upside down and right left switched. So it flips the image horizontally and vertically when you're looking through the scope. And this demonstrates that. And also because of that, when you use the mechanical stage knobs to move it and you're looking through the scope and it looks like it's moving it to the right, if you then look at the stage, it's actually moving to the left, because it flips all the directions. So that's why this is here. And then the flea is here simply because it's interesting to look at. You can see a flea with your naked eye, but you don't see much detail. Well, they have quite a bit of detail, so that's why those are there. Those are your prepared slides. The other category is a wet mount. You make a wet mount today. And a wet mount, you have to start with a blank slide, which is just a piece of glass, of course. Now, it's glass, so you need to be careful, but it's pretty easy to be careful with these because it's pretty thick. Much more dangerous, though, so really be careful, are the much thinner pieces of glass, the cover slips, and these will cut the hell out of you if you don't know they're there. So that's why I don't want to see any of these cover slips anywhere other than in the little box they come in. Don't have them out on the counter or on the floor, because when people clean up, they can, you know, they with a napkin, for instance, they could not even realize they have one there, and it'll go right through the palm of their hand. So don't spread these out. You need one cover slip for your slide. Anyway, it's called a wet mount because on that blank slide you put a drop of something interesting. We have pond water samples for you to work with. And you can mess this up and make it harder to look at if you don't do it carefully. So you put a drop roughly on the center of the slide. And let me just have my hand represent the slide. You don't just haphazardly plop the cover slip on horizontally, because that's going to trap a bunch of air bubbles, and you're going to think they're cells because they're round, but they're just air bubbles. The way you minimize that is to, once you have your drop on the slide, put the cover slip next to the droplet on its edge, and then just let it fall. and the air will be pushed out instead of being trapped as bubbles. Okay, do it that way, and you'll have much better look at things. Everyone's going to see something different because it's random what you're drawing from, but you're likely to see some things. And if you're interested in what it could be, there's a pretty big probability that it'll be listed here on one of these posters. Anyway, that's what you do. And when you're done with your wet mount, do not try to dismantle it. Leave the cover slip in place. Just throw the whole thing in the glass disposal. Just don't put anything other than that in the glass disposal. No gloves or napkins. Other than that, it's cleaning up and enjoying the weekend.